Hey Gators and sports fans, get all your Gator talk, news, analysis, and opinions on the Pod Up with Matthews in the Morning podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast platform or watch us on Facebook Live between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. every weekday. Pod Up, because we are Gator fans. So say, it's great to be a Florida Gator.
And welcome to a Monday edition of Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Got a good show lined up for you. We'll have a lot of stuff to talk about that went over on the weekend, college football, NFL, later in the program. But first, we're going to kick this show off with Roger Maris Jr. Join us on the Titan MR Hotline. Good morning, Roger. How are you?
Hey, Shane. Good. Good to be on.
Absolutely. Well, Roger, we want to bring you on, talk a little bit about your dad, what you got going on these days. Let's start off talking about, you know, growing up in the family of being the son of Roger Maris, the tremendous baseball player. When he broke that record in 61, how old were you? You were too young to remember, right?
Yeah, I was only 3 years old at the time. So, yeah, I don't remember anything other than the stories I hear from everybody else.
Yeah, so let's talk about the movie, which was done by Billy Crystal. I thought it was done very well. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, but just talk about how that all came about. Did they contact you and your family to get permission, or what did they have to do?
No, they didn't. Well, they didn't need to get permission to do it. They just, you know, they could do it. But at the time, we were in litigation, so we were not able to be involved in that production of the movie at all, which was kind of unfortunate because I think it would have been a lot of fun to be involved in, and especially after we saw how well it turned out and the good job that Billy Crystal did with the movie. So no, we weren't able to do that. And the other thing that was, if we could have gotten involved in it, would have been kind of interesting because you know my brother Kevin, and he pretty much looks just like my dad. So as far as a fill-in, I don't know what his acting abilities are, but I mean, as far as a guy standing there looking like dad and walking around looking like dad, he'd have fit the bill pretty good. But no, we weren't involved in it from that aspect. We never knew anything about the movie really until they came to Gainesville to do a private viewing with us to show us the final product, and that's the first time we actually saw it. So
let's talk about, you know, your dad is from like the North Dakota area, which, gosh, I don't know what there. I've never been to North Dakota, but I assume there ain't a whole lot there. But he was a really good athlete. And didn't he have an opportunity to go play college football?
Well, actually, he did. He was a really, really good football player, actually an athlete in general. But he actually still holds the high school record for the most kickoffs returned in one game, which is 4.
Wow.
And he actually went to Oklahoma to play football there, but then he ended up getting a offer to go play baseball that he actually, you know, thought would be better for him in the long haul. So he gave up football and went to play baseball.
So do you remember, I mean, so giving up college football to go play professional baseball, how much money did they offer him back in those days? Do you have any idea?
Peanuts, really. I mean, we'd all laugh about it if we saw what it was. But in those days, obviously, it was enough to entice him to go back because you figure he was broke. He came from nothing. They didn't have any money or anything. So for him, you know, anything was like, you know, big money to him at the time.
So obviously, he had a tremendous baseball career. Going back to the movie or whatever and just talking about his career playing there with the Yankees. Obviously, you know, there was so much talk, you know, obviously, I wasn't around either, but just reading stuff. What was his relationship like with Mickey Mantle?
Well, contrary to what the press obviously tried to make it out to be, because they tried to make it out like they didn't like each other, but they had a really, really good relationship and got along, you know, really, really well. I mean, obviously, Mickey was from a small town in Oklahoma. Dad was from a small town in North Dakota. And they had a lot of commonalities between the two of them. And, you know, the ironic thing was when they were going for the record, they were actually rooming together. And, you know, even though the press was trying to divide them and get stories because, you know, you got to create stories to sell papers and get people to watch your TV and everything else. So, but no, they had a great relationship. And even after, you know, baseball, they remained really good friends and stayed together all the way through to the end. And, you know, Mickey was a pallbearer at Dad's funeral. So, no, their relationship was really, really well.
And I read somewhere, or I can't remember if I read it or heard it, you know, when your dad was chasing Babe Ruth's record, he was getting hate mail and death threats. Is this from, like, Yankee fans?
Well, it was from just people in general, actually. You know, I mean, you know how that goes. I mean, there's always going to be somebody out there to do something stupid. But, yeah. So, anyway, I mean, you got to realize, you know, at the time, I know it all kind of sounds crazy. Why would somebody do that when somebody's, you know, doing something great, you know? But you got to realize when, you know, back, Babe Ruth was not just a baseball icon. He was a sports icon. I mean, baseball was America's pastime. That's what most people followed. And everybody knew who Babe Ruth was. And you can correlate it to like Michael Jordan today. Everybody knows Michael Jordan. Well, everybody knew Babe Ruth. And Babe Ruth had set all the records pretty much in baseball. And he was a guy everybody wanted to talk to. He had funny stories. He was just a beloved guy in general. And then here comes Dad and, you know, 61. And now he's going after Babe. And it's just one of those things where, you know, he had to deal with taking down the Babe. He had to deal with, going up against Mickey, who was the beloved Yankee at the time, and going up against the commissioner. And here was a guy who was going to take down baseball icon's record in the house of the icon on the team the icon played for, in the city the icon played for. And, it just wasn't a good thing, and people didn't want to see that happen. And, yeah, so there was a lot of negative stuff happening. And then you got to realize, too, the press at the time was, you know, writing really, really negative stories about him, trying to pretty much bury him and make him out to be some kind of villain. And so, you know, people, you know, they read things, they hear things, and, you know, things get created. And then all of a sudden you get people that, you know, do crazy things. So that's kind of how everything kind of came about.
Speaking with Roger Maris Jr. on the Titan Amore Hotline, you can follow him on Twitter at Roger Maris Jr. Roger, back to the movie. You said y'all were very pleased with how it came out. Is there anything in there that you wish that you could have changed, or did you like everything about it?
You know, I really never looked at it as if there's something that I wanted to change. I guess, you know, if I looked at it with that mindset, maybe there would have been something. I don't know. I just looked at it. You know, we sat down and had him show us the preview to what he had done. You know, I just thought it was a really, really well done movie. I thought it was well casted. I thought it was well written. I thought the attention to detail was incredible. You know, it's really, really hard to make a baseball movie, but to have somebody who really understood baseball, who loved baseball, and who really, really knew the characters. You know, because Billy was a really, really good friend of Mickey's. And through that, he obviously had known Dad, and he'd followed the Yankees. So he had a good understanding of Dad. And then he consulted, obviously, with guys like Yogi Berra. And then there was a guy, Andy Strasburg, who's like my dad's biggest fan. And so he had, and other people, but he did such a good job consulting with people, trying to get the story accurate and get it done right. And, you know, he didn't just want to throw a guy out there to play Dad who couldn't swing a bat or looked funny. He spent a lot of time trying to get these guys to look like Dad, look like Mickey, talk like Mickey, talk like Dad, walk like Mickey, walk like that. And, you know, casting of everything, like Yogi looked kind of like Yogi and Whitey looked like Whitey. So, I mean, just the whole thing he did, creating the whole set and everything else, I thought he just went above and beyond and, you know, for lack of better words, I guess hit a home run.
At Chris Doering Mortgage, they do mortgage lending right, helping home buyers throughout Gainesville and North Central Florida. Call Chris Doering Mortgage today at 352-244-0840. We're speaking with Roger Maris Jr. on the Titan Amore Hotline. Roger, what year did they retire your dad's number, which, by the way, is number 9 for the New York Yankees?
In 1984.
Did y'all go back? How old were you then? Did the whole family get to go back for that ceremony?
We did. All my family was there. And, yeah, it was a great ceremony. Obviously, meant a lot to him that, you know, have his number retired and a bust of him out there with all the Yankee greats. And, yeah, it was a good feeling because, you know, he had actually, when he left New York, he swore he was never going to go back to New York because he didn't like the way he was treated with the Yankees, didn't like things were handled. So he had bad taste in his mouth for the Yankees, and he never went back to New York. until Steinbrenner bought the Yankees and when they won the pennant. They got in the new stadium. That was the first time he went back. And Georgia just kept begging him to come back, begging him to come back. And then finally, you know, Dad said, you know, if you, you know, put some sod in the baseball field at Oak Hall, you know, I'll come back. So he came back, and they had a great relationship. And, you know, to end up just to get back in New York and be part of what was going on, be around the guys and everything meant a lot to him. And then obviously having his number retired out there and the bus put out there meant a lot to him.
Yeah, speaking of that, I know that the baseball field at Oak Hall is named after your dad. We got a Facebook Live question here for you, Roger, brought to you by Meldon Law, where you matter most. Evan wants to know, and it's we just kind of talked about it, do you get back to many Yankee games?
Well, I don't really go back necessarily for games. I go back for pretty much occasions. They've done things over the years, you know, for Dad. And like I was back for things for him, and I was back for the last game of Yankee Stadium, and I was up there for the first World Series in the new stadium. And then, you know, they've celebrated his home run record up there, 55, 50, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, different occasions that they have up there, I go up there for that. Yeah, it's always fun to be up there. And then my daughter actually worked for the Yankees one summer, so I went up there a couple times for that. But other than that, no.
So let me ask you this about Yankee Stadium. Which stadium do you like better, the old one or the new one?
Well, it's a, you know, that's a tough question. If you like nostalgic and all the history and everything else, you're going to like the old one. But if you like all the bells and whistles and everything else, you can't help but like the new one, because the new one's just state of the art, and it's bad to the bone.
So your dad, I believe, was going to retire as a Yankee, but got traded to the St. Louis Cardinals. Tell us how that kind of happened.
Well, what happened was he had told the Yankees he was going to retire at the end of the 66 season. And so basically that was his plan. And the Yankees kind of went behind his back and traded him to St. Louis, which he was not very happy about. Never knew anything about it until the reporters were started calling him at the house. And then so he started thinking about it. And, you know, we lived in Kansas City, which is only a 3.5-hour drive to St. Louis. And he started thinking about it, and he was like, well, you know, I mean, my family can get there on the big weekend series. We can live there all summer long. It's close to the house. So, you know, and he talked with the Cardinals, and they convinced them that, you know, it'd be such a great thing to do. And so he ended up making that move, going to St. Louis, which turned out to be a great move for him. And he went to a few more World Series, and he actually won one. And then obviously got a contract to get an Anheuser-Busch distributorship here in North Central Florida from the Cardinals. And so he had something to do when he did retire. And so it all worked out really well for him, that move. And so, you know, long haul, yeah, I'd say that ended up being a good move, but he was not happy that the Yankees did that to him.
Right. Let's go back to, you know, he breaks Babe Ruth's record, 61 home runs in 1961. Then I remember watching, and I can't remember what year it was, when Sosa and Mark McGwire are chasing your dad's records. I remember seeing pictures of you and some of your brothers and stuff at different ballparks. What were you really feeling at that time, Roger, you and your brothers and sisters? Because, you know, we come to find out that obviously steroids were involved with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. So technically, there were no steroids around back when your dad played, obviously. So, I mean, do you sit here and think, yeah, my dad still holds the home run record?
Well, in our eyes, he does. I mean, I think, you know, majority of the, if you look at, if you took a poll of the public, I think the public opinion poll would indicate they think Dad still holds the record. I mean, based on everybody I talk to and everything I read and hear and see. But, yeah, so in my mind, I think he still does hold the record.
So, but you guys were, it seemed like y'all were at different ballparks. I know y'all were in St. Louis a lot because obviously y'all had a relationship with the Cardinals and McGwire was playing for the Cardinals. But was it just weird watching him hit these home runs? Did you have a feeling that he was using performance-enhancing drugs?
Well, I did because at the time, you know, I was playing a lot of travel softball. And steroids were rampant at that time. Everybody was using them. I mean, and it was one of those things where, I mean, I was watching guys go from couldn't even hit a home run to now they're hitting home runs. I watch guys go from hitting the ball 320 to 380, you know, and watching these guys swell up and get huge. I worked out all the time. I was in the gym. I mean, I saw people doing it. I saw the results of it. So, yeah, I knew what it could do for you. And, you know, and watching these guys do what they were doing, I mean, you clearly knew they were doing steroids because of my familiarity of being around it. But the problem with it was is that what these guys were doing was such a big story, and nobody wanted to be the guy to break up a feel-good story. And the press finally started kind of figuring out a little bit when those guys started getting around 40-some home runs, but the story got so big that it just kind of fell apart. Because I'd have people call me up and ask me about it, and then there was never any stories. You never saw one story about steroids. So I think some people were on to it, but I think as things go, it was such a feel-good story for everybody. I mean, you were around and you know what happened. I mean, everybody wanted them to chase the record and see if they could break the record. And I mean, it was the number one story on any network, any story that was out there. That's what people were following. That's what people wanted to see. So, yeah, I mean, it was I knew what was going on, but there's really nothing you could do or say about it. And so you just kind of, you know, like Dad always said, take the high road and, you know, things will work themselves out. And, you know, ironically, they have kind of. And so, you know, glad we took the high road instead of whining about it, because all people would have said we were a bunch of whiners because our dad's record's getting broke. So, you know, you take the high road and things work out for the best sometimes.
Yep. Speaking of Roger Maris Jr. here on the Titan Tomorrow Hotline, you can follow him on Twitter at Roger Maris Jr. Okay, so your dad wins multiple MVPs, been an all-star several times, played for, 7 or 8 World Series, I can't remember, won a bunch of titles. He should be in the Hall of Fame, Roger.
Yeah, but that's just another one of those things where, you know, he just gets a bad rap. And, you know, he definitely has the credentials to be in the Hall of Fame. But the problem with the Hall of Fame is everybody wants to say he doesn't have the numbers. So they're trying to compare him with the greats in the Hall of Fame that had long careers and put up, you know, big numbers. Well, Dad only played 12 seasons, but everybody wants to compare him to the top 10% of the Hall of Fame and say he's not worthy of being in there. But if you look at Dad's career, and let's just say, let's go through an analyst and analyze all the people in the Hall of Fame. Let's just come up with the absolute worst person inducted in the Hall of Fame based on stats. Okay, Dad's a shoe-in, hands down, you know. And if you just look at his body of work, of what he did, like, for instance, nobody in the Hall of Fame has hit 61 home runs in the history of the game, zero. And that was always talked about, the iconic record in sports. And that was, of all records, Babe, that was the one that he was most proud of, was his 60 home runs. All right. And so basically, I think he's got the only one in the Hall of Fame with 61 home runs. But then I also think he has the greatest feat in baseball history. And I think what I mean by that is what he had to endure to go through to get to that record of 61, taking on the Babe, taking on Mickey, taking on the fans, the commissioner, doing it in the house that Ruth built, all the things that he went through, the Yankees not protecting them, you know, constantly getting bombarded by, you know, the press and people in the clubhouse, on the field, whatever. I think everything he went through to attain that record, I think if you look at baseball, that is the greatest feat in baseball history. So not only does he have a record, I think he has the greatest feat in baseball history. Then if you look at his MVPs, he's a back-to-back MVP. There's only 13 people in the history of the game that are back-to-back MVPs, and he's one of those 13. And then if you look at his Gold Glove, he is a Gold Glove outfielder too. So Dad can do everything. So basically, he's a Gold Glove outfielder. There's people in the Hall of Fame that aren't Gold Glove outfielders. So he's a Gold Glove outfielder. And if you look at the World Series, like you mentioned, he played in 7 World Series from 1960 to 1968, batted third on all those teams. And he ended up playing in more World Series than anybody in the era he played in the 60s. So, I mean, that's just another reason why. And then if you look at people in the Hall of Fame, there's people in the Hall of Fame that have big numbers, but they never totally dominated the sports. They didn't win MVPs and stuff like that. Well, for 3 years in a row, he pretty much dominated the game of baseball, winning the 2 MVPs. Then the third year comes along, and he actually loses out on the MVP to Mickey, But he actually hit 3 more home runs than Mickey did that year and had 11 more RBIs than Mickey did. But once again, you're not going to win an MVP in 61, 60, 61. You know, it's just hard to win those. But right. My point is he had stats 3 years in a row to dominate the game. And like you said, is a 7-time All-Star. So, I mean, I could keep going on. There's things in here. But my point is he's not the best for the Hall of Fame. But if you show me who is the worst based on stats and analytics, and I can tell you he should be in the Hall of Fame. So yeah. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. Roger, you guys put on a golf tournament out of North Dakota, raised a lot of money for a cancer center out there. Just talk a little bit about how many years you've been doing it and how successful it's been.
Well, I mean, you know, we have a cancer center up there that started in 1990, and it's grown and it's really, really gotten big. And, you know, it's done a lot of wonderful people for that area up there. And, you know, they're turning that thing into trying to be one of the top cancer destinations to go to in the country, somewhere on the level of like MD Anderson. And we have $100 million that are going to be going into making that happen here in the coming years. And so, in other words, when you go to the Roger Maris Cancer Center, you don't have to leave. They're going to have everything. You know, they have the research, the education. They'll be doing the bone marrow, the immunotherapy. They'll be doing radiation, chemo. They'll have hospice. And, you know, the cancer center also takes on blood disorders. So we're real proud of what's happened up there. And through this golf tournament, we've been able to raise a lot of money. And we've been doing the golf tournament now for 38 years. And just have such a great support system there in Fargo to make it all happen. So, yeah, real proud of what we've done and what's happened up there.
That's awesome. You and your brother, Rich, I believe, have started a clothing or apparel company called 61 Outfitters. Tell us all about that.
Well, 61 Outfitters is the name of the company, and we have 4 collections. We have a home run hunting collection, home run fishing, a baseball, and a circle collection, which is a lifestyle line. And the company, our slogan is where the quest begins. And every one of our collections has a quest. So hunting is quest to bag the best, fishing quest to catch the best, and baseball and circles quest to be the best. And the 61 is the big thing in the company, the number 61. That's why we started the company. When you see the 61, we have that in all our designs, shirts, hats, et cetera. So when you see the 61 in our designs, the whole idea is to take a minute and stop and remember the people who put you on your quest in life. And for Rich and I, as our dad, but we want people to look at that 61 when they put on any of our apparel and think about their people in their lives that put them on the quest to be the best. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun doing the company. We've had, you know, so many people talk to us about the memories that they've had of dad and then what the 61 means to them. And when they're honoring and remembering the people that they're honoring and remember when they're putting on our apparel. So, it's been a good time doing it. And it's just been something that, we look forward to keep doing.
Yeah, and people, we're going to put it up on our website on the Facebook Live at 61outfitters.com. You can go there and browse their website and purchase some things. And also for, I think, till September 18th, you can get 25% off when you put in the promo code Shane. So go buy
your gear. Make sure you put a check. So that's another thing they need to do is put it in a checkout. Because a lot of times people go there and get confused, but you have to do it at checkout.
At checkout. Okay, we'll make sure we put that up there. But Roger, hey man, appreciate you taking the time to join the show today. We really do appreciate it. You know, if you haven't checked out the movie, folks, you need to check it out. It's called 61, done by Billy Crystal. It's an outstanding movie. But we appreciate you coming on and talking about your dad, Rog.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, great being on. And, you know, I think you're doing a great job with the podcast. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate it, Roger. That's Roger Maris Jr. Join us on the Titan MR Hotline. We're going to take our first time out of the program. When we come back, we'll talk a little college football and NFL football, what happened over the weekend. You're watching and listening to Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios. We'll be right back.
Hey, Gators, this is Coach Steve Spurrier. Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
We want to take this moment to thank all our sponsors who keep the show going and pay the bills. Our Gridiron sponsors are Crime Prevention Security Systems, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Titan MRI, Gainesville's only locally owned and operated MRI facility. Gainesville Turnover Specialist. Meldon Law, where you matter most. Peachland Dental, Gator Nation's first choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte. Celebration Point Town Center. Center State Bank. Chris Doring Mortgage. Our touchdown sponsors are Campus USA Credit Union, The Digital Mortgage Guy, Adams Ribs, Doreen Wiebe Realtor, Caldwell Banker, M.M. Parrish, Gator Dominoes, Celebrate Primary Care, Davis Gainesville Chevrolet, Miapa Latin Cafe, Rap Spot, Okito America, Gators Dockside, Radware, Style Cuts, Ironwood Golf Course, TB Financial, Meadowbrook Golf Course, Dar Shakow Insurance. Again, thank you for all the great businesses that support the show. Please remember, if you like what we are doing here, thank our sponsors and support the businesses that support us.
Welcome back to this Monday edition of Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. I want to thank Roger Maris Jr. for joining us, talk a little bit about his dad's career. Man should be in the Hall of Fame. Hopefully one day that will happen. We're going to go now back to the Titan MR hotline and get our man JC, Johnny Cornell. Good morning, JC. How are you?
Yeah, my man. How you doing? Doing well. It's a little bit of a cloudy Monday, but I'm ready to start the week. I had a big day, a big weekend. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Before that, JC, at Center State Bank, we put business first. We are the largest community bank in the state of Florida and understand that small businesses need a community business partner that they can rely on. Center State has five convenient Alachua County locations to serve you better. Center State Bank, member FDIC. Yeah, JC, it was a good weekend. A lot of sports, you know.
Oh, man.
What day it was, I don't think it was during the weekend. It may have been Thursday or Friday. It was the first time in the history of the world where we had, I think it was Thursday, we had college football being played, had NFL being played, you had the U.S. Open going, you had golf going, you had hockey going, and you had NBA going. I think it was the first time ever all those sports being played. So, yeah, let's what's fresh in our minds, let's talk about what happened yesterday, opening day for the NFL. What stood out to you, JC?
Well, you know, I had the ability to watch most of all the games. I love this NFL Red Zone package that's available on the cable, and I got to see 7 hours of non-commercial interrupted football, and it was tremendous for me because that's perfect for me, and I got to see a lot of the scores, a lot of the big plays that were happening yesterday. I watched just about every game, QB, honestly, and it was a lot of fun. What stood out was there were six things that I remember from yesterday that stood out. Josh Allen's performance in Buffalo with 312 yards and three touchdowns, two passing. Josh Jacobs, who had three rushing touchdowns for the Vegas Raiders. I was really excited to see Minshew Mania continue in Jacksonville where they let the fans in the stadium. 19 of 20 with three touchdowns, no interceptions. I think that was just as big as three touchdowns almost. Aaron Rodgers just kept on doing what Aaron Rodgers does, and I don't know why people are so worried about Green Bay's offense. Obviously, he and Devontae Adams, who had 156 yards and two touchdowns with 14 receptions, they are the two right now the most connected, I think, quarterback-wide receiver tandem in the NFL. And then, of course, you had the Washington football team with eight sacks on Carson Wentz yesterday, coming back from a 17-0 deficit with Dwayne Haskins, of all people, and really doing a great thing. And as you watch the Eagles play, you have to wonder what is it that they do at their headquarters or at their on their camps when every single game, it seems like, they are hampered by multiple injuries. We had four inactive starters yesterday. I mean, honest to goodness, what happens in Philadelphia is hard for me to understand with all these injuries they always seem to have. We had a Rams safety last night, a sixth-round pick, had eight tackles, including a huge play on fourth and three at the 11-yard line against Dallas, and the Rams picked up a three-point win. So those were some of the things that really stood out in my mind. I thought Arizona's comeback stood out in my mind at San Francisco. I love the way that they played defense, holding the 49ers to maybe one big play in that game on that pass to Mostert. So there was, I tell you, QB, it was nice to see that the football being put. I thought it was pretty good quality of football without any preseason, without a lot of things going on that typically normally happen before a September start. And I think these teams played fairly well. I think we saw more of the same from some of the teams that are used to losing, like my Lions, who gave away a game against Chicago yesterday. I thought it was sad to see the Bengals, unfortunately, lose a game on a 31-yard missed field goal attempt. When the kid hit a 50-yarder earlier in the game, I thought Joe Burrow in his debut was pretty good, 26 out of 36 and one touchdown. Look, he did enough to keep them in the game and give them a chance to win, and that's all you can ask from Joe Burrow at this point right now. So I feel bad for Randy Bullock. He missed that field goal, and it just keeps on going down the tubes for Cincinnati. I'm not sure Baker Mayfield's the answer in Cleveland. I think Baltimore is going to win the AFC, the Eastern Division there, and be, again, a top one or two seed, along with Kansas City. So those were some of my initial thoughts, QB, and I'd like to hear any response you have to those.
Well, Joe Burrow, I thought, played very well. He threw a touchdown with about 10 seconds left of the game, but they called offensive interference on A.J. Green. Kind of questionable, but I thought he played well. I thought it was good. I thought the Jags played extremely hard with their first time. I don't know all the records this kid set, but he was undrafted rookie. Their running back, James Robinson, ran extremely hard. Minshew played very well. You know, it goes to show you, you know, people can say what they want to say about Jay Gruden. He's done a tremendous job with every quarterback he's had. He's always had good offenses everywhere he's coached. When he was with the Bengals, he had Andy Dalton. They put up a lot of numbers. He goes to Washington. Didn't matter what quarterbacks they had there, they put up numbers. And he's going to – you could just tell the way he called plays yesterday, he knows what he's doing. But he's a former quarterback, and I'll lean towards those kind of guys. You know, Chicago has a big comeback, as you said. The Redskins, whatever they're called, have a huge comeback. But the main game was the Bucs against the Saints. And you could tell Tom Brady was not the same Tom Brady. He was not comfortable. But what surprised me the most, because I watched that game a lot, JC, you know, Bruce Arians is kind of a pass-happy type offense. They threw it a ton with Jameis last year. It felt like, to me, the first half, they hardly even threw the football. They ran it way too much, and they come out in the second half, and they start throwing it. They move the football down there, and Tom made a couple bad throws. They're going to be fine, I believe. But it was interesting to me, kind of some of their thought process early in the game with Brady at the helm. It was like, we're going to try to establish the run, which I think they need to throw it every down, quite honestly. I thought the NFL was good. I didn't get to stay up late. I watched the first half of the Cowboys last night. Baltimore looked good. Cleveland looked terrible. You know, Buffalo looked very good. But again, they were playing the Jets, so who knows how good they really are. So, we got two games tonight, but I thought it was pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I think a lot of what we saw from Tampa last year was obviously a lot of turnovers with Winston throwing the football, but it almost felt like Tampa had to throw the football a lot last year because they found themselves trailing in the games most of the time. And I think Arians wants to kind of bring the temperature down a little bit and use his offense to do the things that not ask Brady to always just win the game for you like maybe he had to do in New England. Now, I don't know if that's going to continue on, but I think you're right. I think the Bucs will be fine. I think it's going to be a tough division for them. Well, actually, I don't think it's going to be a tough division for them. I think it's a two-team division. I think they and New Orleans are going to fight it out in the NFC South because I'm not impressed with Atlanta or Carolina's defense right now, and I think there's a lot of work to be done there. I was, I was a little dismayed at the Lions game yesterday. You probably didn't see it, but DeAndre Swift had a touchdown pass that would have won the game, hit him in the hands. And Stafford did all he had to do. He did everything he could. Now, they had a 21-point or a 18-point lead or a 17-point lead going into the fourth quarter. And Trubisky, who couldn't hit the side of a door, a barn, just lights him up in the fourth quarter for 21 points and three touchdown passes. And it was just weird to watch because the Lions seemed to be in control for about 90% of that game. And it just goes to show you that teams like this just don't know how to finish, it seems like to me. And maybe that's why the Lions always get so many bad breaks, is because they don't create their own luck, so to speak. I mean, Swift had the ball hit him in the hand. There's no way you drop that football 9 out of 10 times you catch it, and the one time you drop it is what happened to him yesterday. I felt bad for Burrow. You know, he made a bad mistake with a little shuffle pass interception there in the fourth quarter that had them driving. But to his credit, the defense held, and then he got them back down the field in position to tie or win the game. I think Dallas kind of got hosed at the end of their game last night on a pass interference call. And I think A.J. Green's call was pretty marginal as well. So, I don't know. I'm not impressed with some of these teams, but I'll tell you, it looks like more of the same for many of the teams in the NFL after week one, and I'm sure things will change as we go forward. But it was a good day of football. It really was a good day of football. Saturday, QB, I tell you, I don't know about you, but our friends at Florida State have to be worried about scoring points when they can only muster 10 points against Georgia Tech? Is that what they got? 10
yeah,
points?
You know,
13 points?
I was very surprised at that game. Yeah. Only because, I will say this, they were coached better than they were under Willie Taggart. But maybe there's not talent there. I will say, it was one of the lowest Florida State football teams I've seen in a long time, especially in the backfield. I don't see any speed coming out of the backfield at the running back position. Mm-hmm. James Blackman has been there forever. He is what he is. You know, and give Jeff Collins and Georgia Tech a lot of credit with a true freshman quarterback. Yeah. I mean, they dominated the game, honestly. I mean, if they don't have whatever it was, two or three field goal attempts blocked, that game's not even in doubt. So, Florida State, gosh, JC, they could easily lose five games this year.
They could easily lose five games this year, and I would think they're probably going to be an underdog when their next game happens down in Miami, even though Miami's nothing to get too overly excited about. I think Miami is going to be favored to win that game down in Miami, not this weekend, but the following weekend. So Florida State's got a lot of time to work on some things to try to get better. But it's like you said, I don't know if they're capable of getting better, QB, or better.
I thought they played at Louisville this week.
Florida State? Okay, maybe I misread something there. Okay, that's possible. I'm sorry. I thought they were playing Miami next. Okay.
Well regardless.
Miami's playing Louisville this week. Florida State's off. I was right. Florida State is off. Miami's playing Louisville, and then Florida State's playing Miami.
Okay, I knew somebody. One of those was playing Louisville. So, yeah, that was. I mean, if you're a Florida State fan, you got to be very, very disappointed.
Awful.
And if you are a member of the Big 12, when the Sun Belt, Sun Belt rolls into your ballparks and goes 3-0,
oh man, oh my
that
god,
is a Big 12.
I realize I saw that too. QB, Kansas State, Iowa State, Kansas. I mean, who was it in Manhattan? Not Manhattan, but in Lawrence, Kansas, that thought that hiring Les Miles was a good idea at his age right now? In a program like that, where there's absolutely no, there's no electricity, there's no energy at Kansas, and they bring in Les Miles. I just don't know what the thought process was. You need a younger person to cut his teeth at a job like that. You don't need a guy who's just looking to collect paychecks, who's so damn old that there's no chance he's going to out recruit any of the Oklahoma or Texas schools, and who may have had some success over a decade ago down at Louisiana State. So I think you're right. I think the Big 12 is really a disaster. I mean, think about it. Who would you rather be right now, be the Pac-12 that didn't play or be the Big 12 who did play and shouldn't have played? I mean, Oklahoma won, obviously. Texas won, obviously. But that's really some minor representation because they need to have a better conference representation out of their other schools, and they were awful.
Well, what's crazy is, you know, Matt Campbell, the head coach at Iowa State, was always this hot commodity.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure.
They're a ranked team, and the Raging Cajuns came in there and put it on them. And,
who aren't bad, by the way. Who aren't bad. Give them some credit. They're going to be ranked. They're ranked.
Well, yeah, they should be ranked. But, yeah,
they're ranked.
You know, and I didn't think Notre Dame was very impressive. I mean, the most impressive team I saw, and I felt like, after the first couple of drives, they kind of just sleptwalked with the Clemson Tigers. They are not going to be even challenged, I don't think, this year in the ACC.
No, it's absolutely right. That was another observation that I had in the opening weekend of the biggest story was, you know, we had two Power Three conferences playing finally. And what did you come out of with those conferences? And that's exactly what I thought too, QB. I thought that the ACC is going to be a snoozer at best. It would be one of the bigger shocks of many seasons if Clemson were to lose any of those games against those teams in that conference. And when you've got a Coastal Carolina rolling into your yard and beating you at Kansas, then you've got, you know, so many. It's almost like the only you're not even in the Big 12 for football. You're in it for basketball. It's unbelievable.
But this is back-to-back years that the Chanticleers have rolled into Lawrence, Kansas, and won. They won there last year, too.
Well, maybe Kansas should – no, I did not. Maybe they should start calling themselves the Chanticleers because they are an embarrassment to Kansas University alumni who care about football, which there's probably not many. But I think Kansas State getting beat was a joke. I think that, like you said, the Iowa State team – you know, look, Louisiana has some players down there in Lafayette, and they're ranked 19th now. So let's give them a lot of credit. That should get some attention down Louisiana. They've had a hard time with this hurricane that's come through that area. Certainly Lafayette was hit, but not as bad as Lake Charles or McNeese State is. But it's still very difficult to deal with power outages and so forth. And that school just strapped up their chin straps and took a ride and took to Iowa and laid it on the Cyclones at Jack Trice Stadium. So, yeah, I think we saw some really unique things happen this weekend, and I'm just so glad that we're able to talk about it finally and watch it because it really occupied my day yesterday. So
is the Sun Belt now the fourth Power Five conference?
I mean, you might have to make a case for that if you're a Sun Belt president because good for them. And, you know, they get players that a lot of these bigger conferences may overlook that really have talent. And, and I think it's pretty impressive.
So – I, you and several other sports analysts always
here you go.
Okay.
Here you go.
So well, what did, you just stuck your foot in your mouth when you just
no,
said
I
that.
Did not because you're talking about Kansas, okay? Kansas. I you know, I don't care about watching Kansas any more than I care about watching Tulane. But you know,
Iowa State was a ranked team.
Well, Louisville's
Kansas
not,
State is a bowl team. So my point is these schools, the Lafayettes, the Coastal Carolinas, the FAUs, the UCFs, the Troys of the world, the UAVs, they deserve those opportunities to play. I mean, UAV, you know, give them another year or two and they compete with Miami. I mean, that game was a one score game late into the game. So my point is they are good players, as you just stated, that play at these schools that deserve to play against the big boys. Whether you want to buy a ticket to see it or not, you just said you enjoyed watching it on TV.
No, I didn't enjoy watching it. I enjoyed reacting to it because it made me just gag because in a happy way. Because I didn't sit there and watch Louisiana play Iowa State. I think I was doing something else. But when I saw the results, I reacted as if to say, well, wow, I probably missed something there. But how often is this kind of thing going to happen? I don't know. Could Louisiana – I keep trying to call them Louisville. But could Louisiana beat Kansas State in Week 5? Probably. Maybe not. I don't know. But they sure did when they had to. And you're right. I got to give them credit for that. But I don't have to sit around watching Louisiana football playing against Appy State. I'm not going to sit around and watch that. Now, if they want to go play in these big stadiums, that, like you say, Kansas State, which isn't really big at all, but I get what you're saying. If they want to go and win a game up there, then, you know, that's on Kansas State as far as I'm concerned because I think Kansas State should be able to win that game. So does Vegas, and so do all the people who bet on it. So I think you've got a point in some regard, but I think also things like this happen early in the season. And then as we go down the season, you see teams like Coastal Carolina losing to games, teams like VMI, and you see teams like Arkansas State losing to teams like Northeastern Louisiana. So, you know, that's the kind of thing. If you can do it one week after the next, after the next, after the next, okay. But you're entitled to get an upset win on the road once in a while. That's okay with me.
Refresh your vehicle and your brand with a vehicle wrap from Wrap Spot. September is your lucky month at Wrap Spot. Mention promo code Shane and receive 13% off your vehicle wrap. We're speaking with JC here on the Titan MRI line. We can actually get districts there because they're very good football teams in those smaller.
Well, I'll tell you what, when Monroe beats Louisiana, you explain to me how that happens, okay? Or when Texas State beats Arkansas State, right? You let me know.
Go back about 12 years ago. Didn't Monroe beat some school in Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
Right, and since then, where have they done?
Have they played them again?
All right. I mean,
I'm just stating facts.
Don't go there with me. Okay, they beat Alabama in 07. They would never have beaten Alabama after that, and you know it as well as I do. But I think it's okay that once in a while they go on the road and beat some team like Kansas or Kansas State. But let's be honest, they're probably going to lose four games this year. They're going to lose a game to Texas State. Not one person's going to give a damn. Not one. So you can say all you want about how great it is, but it's not great.
They're trying to win their conference title.
And then they can go to the Bahamas Bowl, and we're all happy for them. Good. I mean, I think that's a great thing for those schools. Fantastic. Go to the Bahamas Bowl and play at noon on December 21st. And, play in the Bahamas. I got no problem with that. That's fine with me. I mean, it's great. Yeah.
I'm a huge supporter of those programs.
Of course, they make college football. They make college football.
They do. Again,
they don't pay the bills, QB. But it goes back to
until you are a high school coach or you're affiliated with high school athletes or you have a kid that is not big enough, strong enough, fast enough, for whatever reason, to play at a major school, it gives them an opportunity. How many dudes played in yesterday? We're from those small schools. A ton is my point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's a hard road to go because the odds are against you. But every now and then you get through it and you do well.
Well, the odds are really against you. When you go to the combine, it doesn't matter if you played at Alabama or Louisiana Lafayette. It doesn't matter.
What I mean by that, QB, what I mean is the attention given to you is much less because you're at some of these small schools.
Well, the attention by normal media. But the scouts see these players.
Okay,
that's my point.
I get it.
That's why these kids need the opportunities to play at small college because they're good enough. They may not fit the mold of a certain, these Power Five guys. With they only look for a certain specific height, weight, things of that nature, which that stuff is important. But there's more to playing football than just the measurables is my point. And that gives these kids the opportunity to go to these smaller schools to fulfill their dreams, and they can still play at the next level. I mean, they're scattered all over the damn NFL rosters.
Well, you make it sound like I don't want any of those schools to play football, period. That's not
the only way they can play football, JC, is if they play the big boys so their programs have a chance to survive.
Well, QB, again, I it's not the season ticket holders' responsibility at the University of Florida to support Furman's program. But I will say this, if they can find a way to keep their sport going and play amongst each other, I got no problem with it. I just don't want to sit in a stadium with 80,000 fans in November watching a scrimmage. I'm not interested. So if you want to sit around and watch that, you go do that, and I'm going to go watch something else. And that's fine. But I'm not saying these kids shouldn't have an opportunity. You make it sound like these kids don't deserve to play football. I never said that.
The only way they can survive is if they play the Kansases, Kansas State.
How did they survive in these programs before the big football stadium showed up? Before Alabama put 50,000 seat stadium, 50,000 seat stadium in the 80s.
And who did y'all play two or three times a year? Who did you play two or three times a year? Southern Miss.
We play Southern Miss, but I don't think game kept Southern Miss's program afloat. It may have helped. Southern Miss had to play ten other games.
We got to take a timeout. We'll be right back. You're watching and listening to Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios. We'll be right back.
Hey, Gators, this is Coach Steve Spurrier. Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
We want to take this moment to thank all our sponsors who keep the show going and pay the bills. Our Gridiron sponsors are Crime Prevention Security Systems, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Titan MRI, Gainesville's only locally owned and operated MRI facility. Gainesville Turnover Specialist. Meldon Law, where you matter most. Peachland Dental, Gator Nation's first choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte. Celebration Point Town Center. Center State Bank. Chris Doring Mortgage. Our touchdown sponsors are Pomodoro Cafe, Big Mills Cheesesteaks, Cornerstone Financial, McDonald's Gainesville, My IT Masters, Gainesville Neon and Signs, 84 Lumber, Tropical Smoothie, Chick-fil-A on Archer Road, Aver and Smith Personal Injury Attorneys, Orange Theory Fitness, PRP Regeneration Specialist, and Dowling Signs. Again, thank you for all the great businesses that support the show. Please remember, if you like what we are doing here, thank our sponsors and support the businesses that support us.
Welcome back to this Monday edition of Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios. I got to get to the, we're going to give the play of the day today, which is brought to you by GTS Gainesville's premier maintenance company. Whether you need carpet cleaning or expert painting, fences mended, or any handyman services, call GTS 352-363-6622. The play of the day, JC, you ever heard of Alec Mills?
No, who is that?
Okay, Alec Mills is a right-hander for the Chicago Cubs, and he is the play of the day. He threw a no-hitter against the Milwaukee Brewers yesterday for the Chicago Cubs. That's brought to you by the GTS Handyman Services.
Okay, how about that? Well, that's a good news event. Other things that happened yesterday while we were watching football, the Lightning went up 3-1. To the Islanders. They're one game away from the Stanley Cup Finals, where they will likely face the Dallas Stars, who are also up 3-1 on Vegas in the NHL. And we've got a game 7 between Denver and the Clippers, your favorite team, in the NBA, with both teams tied at 3 after that was supposed to be over a week ago. So good for Denver. Yep. They forced that.
Yeah, they came back from 17 down in like the third quarter.
Yeah, so that's a game 7 coming. So Lakers are waiting on the winner there. And by the way, QB, I've got good news for you, because Friday night, I know where you'll be, in front of the TV, or I should say in front of ESPN3 for that Coastal Carolina Campbell game. I know you're excited about that on Friday.
Speaking of Campbell, one of my former teammates, Mike Minner, is their head coach. And they had Georgia Southern beaten, which Georgia Southern – Campbell is a Division II team. I watched a kid I coached, Jalen Kelsey, caught 2 touchdown passes. Campbell went for 2 to win the game at Georgia Southern. So
Why did I bring that up? I'm sorry. Okay, well that's
because
great.
you didn't want me to throw stats at you. The Campbells ain't bad, dude. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, they get Coastal, the Chanticleers, on Friday. I'm sure you'll be tuned into ESPN3. So
I will. I'll watch that if I ain't doing nothing else, because that's good football.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. Coastal Carolina has a stud at quarterback. Stud. He's only a redshirt freshman. He is a damn good player.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'm excited for that. Thursday night, what do we have? The Bengals and the Browns. We'll talk probably more about that classic coming up, the Battle of Ohio. Ohio State, first of all, before we go, QB, you think they're going to vote this week or soon before maybe next week on the Big Ten? Because I'm getting these little snippets off Twitter that there's a possibility there could be another vote amongst these chancellors, and that if one team said if they get a majority, then all schools are going to try to play football in October.
Yeah, we'll see. It's ridiculous they're not flying, but we shall see. We got a text here from Daryl, the Titan MR text line. He says, do I think North Carolina could be the second best team behind Clemson in the ACC? I do, but man, did they sputter around and they didn't look great either.
They did.
And maybe they didn't play great against Syracuse. Syracuse is a bad football team, but I do think North Carolina should be the second best team in the league. I mean, maybe Notre Dame, but they didn't look great either. But Notre Dame will destroy South Florida. I watched some of South Florida against the other day. Bad football teams there.
Yeah, no, that's hard to watch. You're right. Well, and then when does Willie Taggart get back on the field for FAU? Oh, they play Georgia Southern, and they're favored. I bet you're going to take Southern in that one.
Georgia Southern wasn't that impressive at home, but we'll see.
You'll see.
But anyway, JC, today's show is a wrap. Brought to you by RapSpot. Stay safe, and we will see you tomorrow. Right. Tomorrow we got Frank Frangie and Buddy Martin. We'll talk to Frank, the play-by-play voice of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Big win for them yesterday. Get his thoughts and also talk a little more college football. Today, the show is a wrap, brought to you by Raspot. Take care, folks.